Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's October the 21st, and we're in Shmuel Beis. We're in the middle of Perek Chaf Aleph, chapter 21. We got up to Pasuk Tezvav, up to verse 15. However, we left a significant point, which we have to begin with, and then we'll continue on. So, last week we discussed the heroic efforts of Ritzpah Bas Aya. And we mentioned how that there was a fast for three consecutive years in Israel. And David asked, what's that? But I said a fast, thank you. A famine. Yeah, fast. A famine.
It was an involuntary fast.
That's right, an involuntary fast, that's right. A famine for three consecutive years in Israel. And David asked the Urim v'Tumim, and he was told, the reason is for two things, that Shaul was not eulogized properly, number one, and number two, that Shaul inadvertently caused the loss of livelihood for the Givonim. So David said, I can't do anything about Shaul because since it's past a year, it's longer than a year since he was buried, it's been many years since he died, therefore we can't eulogize him anymore because the eulogy has to take place within the first year. So we can't do anything about that, but I could try to appease the Givonim. David tried in many ways, and it was very hard to appease them. They refused to receive any... To accept any kind of appeasement, and as a result, they demanded the deaths of seven of Shaul's descendants, including two sons of Ritzpah Bas Aya, and they were given those seven descendants, and they hung them. That doesn't necessarily mean they killed them by hanging. It's unclear exactly how they killed them, but they hung them after either way they hung them up for either 6 or 7 months, depending on which measures you look at, and they did not allow the bodies to be buried. Ritzpah Bas Aya came out and she guarded the bodies both day and night to make sure they did not get defiled by animals or birds. And then when David heard about what Ritzpah Bas Aya did, then David exhumed the bodies of Shaul and Yehonah's son and took them and those seven bodies that were hanging and buried them properly. And then there was a mass eulogy, a hesped throughout all of the cities of Yisrael. All the cities of Israel eulogized Shaul properly. So in the end, Shaul was eulogized according to the proper way, according to Halacha. We left off with a question, which is that why would the action of Ritzpah Bas Aya, why would that affect David's decision over here? At first he said he was unable to eulogize Shaul. We had mentioned last week that when a body is exhumed and then reburied, then the eulogy can happen again because that's like a mini, time of mourning. So therefore, there could be a hesped, and that's what happened over here. But David did not consider exhuming the bodies until after this episode with the seven men being hung and Ritzpah Bas Aya guarding the bodies. And then it says clearly, it was told to David what Ritzpah Bas Aya, the Pilegesh of Shaul, did. And then David went and he exhumed the bodies of Shaul and Yehonah's son. So it seems very clear that it is one led to the other. Her action was the trigger for David doing this. That was a good thing that David did, because in the end he was able to correct what had been wrong about Shaul, that Shaul was not eulogized properly. Now they were able to eulogize him properly, and then the famine ended completely. But we left off with the question of what exactly was the trigger. Why was her action so special? Now, we mentioned last week that what was special about her action was that it says that she took the blanket or the cloth and she spread it out on the tzur. A tzur means a stone. But Chazal say, our sages tell us, that what she was, what the Navi is alluding to is that she said, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo, that the Rach, meaning Hashem, his actions are perfect. And she accepted the din, even though it was a very harsh judgment. Two of her boys were killed. She accepted it. And it was through no fault of theirs. They were killed for nothing that they did. It's for something that was done by their father. And it was also inadvertent. And nevertheless, she did not question God. She wasn't angry at God. She allowed to, she just accepted it as the din. And she said, even though I don't understand, Hashem is perfect and whatever he does is correct. So that's an unbelievable thing. We mentioned it last week, an incredible act of faith and self-sacrifice on the part of Ritzba Bas Aya. But why does that then lead to David exhuming the bodies of Shaul and Yehonasan, and therefore allowing for a proper hesped, a proper eulogy? That was the question we left off with last time. Now, we mentioned the beginning of the class last time that it's the Navi, Hashem is dealing with Shaul in two apparently opposite ways. On the one hand, the Jews are being punished for not having eulogized Shaul properly. The great tzaddik Shaul was killed, and the Jews didn't properly speak about how great their loss was, which is what a eulogy is. A eulogy is a talk which gets people to realize how significant the loss is, so that people will cry over the person who passed away, which means the Jews did not cry enough over the loss of Shaul. And at the same time, the famine was because of something that Shaul did, which was bad, even though it was inadvertent, and even though Shaul was a great tzaddik, but there was a shortcoming, and for that reason, the Jews are punished as well. So, within the same calamity, that is, the famine, we have the same person being on the one hand praised and on the other hand blamed. We mentioned last time that is the way Hashem does things, that is the way it works. The Gemara makes it clear that Hashem, when he judges, it's an all-encompassing judgment. And a person can at the same time be judged very favorably for a wonderful thing they did, and also, unfortunately, can be called to task for something terrible they did. It can go both ways. David, when this happened, felt that he could not dig up the graves of Shaul and Yehonasan. Now, it is usur, it's prohibited to dig up a grave. One is not allowed to do that unless it is for the benefit of the deceased. So in situations where, God forbid, they're going to defile a graveyard, and if we move the bodies, then they won't be defiled. So then that would be an example where it would be okay. Or an example where a person was buried in the wrong place. Sometimes we don't allow the exhuming of the grave. Sometimes we do. It depends on the situation. There are situations where a person is buried in a city and there are no longer any relatives living there to visit the grave. And all the relatives, let's say, move to Eretz Yisrael. So then there is... It's. I'm not telling you that every case is okay, but then there is what to talk about, that perhaps it would be okay to move the body to Eretz Yisrael, which is where the family is. Mm-hmm. Maybe. Just that, yeah, but it has to be for the purpose of the kavod, the honor of the mace, of the one who has passed away. Now here, had David exhumed the graves, that would have given an excuse, or would have permitted, I should say, the saying of a hesped of eulogy, which you would think is good for the mace, it's good for the one who passed away. After all, the Jews are being taken to task for the fact they didn't do it. Obviously, it was a bad thing. The Gemara, though, discusses whether a hesped, a eulogy, is for the one who passed away, or is it for those who are left behind? What's the reason for a hesped? The Gemara goes back and forth about this question. Is it for the kavod of the mace, of the one who passed away, or is it for the benefit of those who are living? And there are two opinions, and the Gemara goes back and forth. You can't exhume the grave for the benefit of those who are living. And the Jews who were alive, they're the ones suffering because of the famine. So to exhume the grave in order to say a eulogy, in order to stop the famine, whose benefit is that? That's for the people who are alive. That's not for the benefit of Shaul. He's not starving. He's not living. So he's not starving. So that would not have been a reason to exhume the body. So the only reason to exhume the body would have been that there is an element of kavod for the one who had passed away, that the hesped be said, that the eulogy be said. That would be a kavod for him. And that would be a reason to exhume the body. David, at the outset of the story, does not feel that it is justifiable to exhume the body for that reason. At that point, he feels the only reason to exhume the body would be to allow for a hesped, to allow for eulogy, for the benefit of the Jewish people so the famine would end. It's not allowed. Can't do that. So all that leaves is somehow for the benefit of the one who has died. So at the outset, David does not feel that it is appropriate there to exhume the body for the benefit of Shaul. The question is, why not? Isn't there a benefit for Shaul? The honor of Shaul. Yeah.
But if he rectified what Hashem is kind of taking Shaul to task for first,
right,
then it's a cleaner way to do the hesped.
Okay.
Then there's no blemish on it whatsoever.
Okay, good, good.
And the people are going to do it on a deeper level because they're going to have felt that they rectified it, so they're going to feel part of it.
Okay, so that's a very good point. That's true. That is the beginning of the answer. That first of all, David seems to have felt that he needed to take care of the thing that Shaul had done wrong before taking care of doing things right. And you're right, that'll make it a better hesped. More than that, if you take care of what Shaul did wrong and the famine doesn't completely end, that's more proof that Hashem is demanding the kavod of Shaul. But nevertheless, the reason why it's not a complete answer is because he doesn't do it immediately after the seven people are killed. He waits, and it's only after Ritzba Bas Aya does her incredible act of self-sacrifice and faith and takes care of the bodies, only then does he do it, and it's because he heard what she did. So why is that? So I want to remind you of some things we learned before. Now, when I say things we learned before, I want to remind you of one thing that we learned a year ago, and something else we learned about maybe 2 years ago. So I don't know exactly when we had these classes. But let's go back all the way to the beginning of Shmuel. All the way to the beginning. All the way to the beginning, Shmuel Aleph. Way back when, we had the story of the sons of Eli, who had not behaved properly. And at that time, because of how they behaved, Hashem gave a prophecy that Eli's family would end up being punished severely. Now, he did not give the prophecy to Eli. To whom did Hashem give the prophecy to tell Eli that there was going to be a terrible punishment to his family?
Samuel.
Gave it to Shmuel. Shmuel, who was the fledgling student of Eli, he gets the nevuah, he gets the prophecy. In fact, what number prophecy for Shmuel is this?
Why,
it's his first, very first prophecy. The first one he ever gets is this terrible, terrible prophecy against Eli, against his own Rebbe. It's a difficult thing. I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. Now, what did Shmuel do when he received that prophecy?
He doesn't tell him.
He doesn't want to tell him. He's afraid to tell Eli. But Eli realizes that the reason why Shmuel isn't saying anything is because he's afraid it has to do with him. So back in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Gimel, chapter 3, Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, it says that Eli says to Shmuel, what was spoken to you? Al nasichached mimeni, don't hold back from me. Kol yas alecha elokim v'chayosif, Hashem should do the same thing to you and add on, im techached mimeni davar, if you hold anything back from me, kol adavar shadibar elecha, from everything that Hashem said to you. I want to hear everything. Don't pull punches. I want to hear the whole thing. Yud Ches 18, v'yaged lo Shmuel es kol hadvarim. And Shmuel told him everything. V'lo chiched mimenu, and he did not hold back anything. V'yomar, and Eli said, Hashem hu hatov be'enav ya'aseh. He is Hashem. What is good in his eyes, he will do. Is Eli accepting, or is he rejecting? He's clearly accepting. He's clearly accepting what happened. Even though it's going to be a calamity to him, and it's very bad news, he says, I accept whatever it is. It's Hashem, and whatever he says goes. In Shmuel Beis, we had the story of David and Bathsheba. And unfortunately, David behaved incorrectly with Bathsheba. Then, after David behaves incorrectly, the Navi comes to him. Which Navi comes to him? Nathan. Nasana Navi. And gives him this whole parable of the poor man and the rich man, etc. And then he tells David, says to David, what should be the punishment of the rich man for taking advantage of the poor man? And David says he should be killed. And then Nasan says, he says to him, Ataha Ish, you are that man. And in Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Beis, chapter 12, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, David's reaction is, Vayomer David al Nasan, Chatasi la Hashem. I have sinned to Hashem. Again, we find that David accepts that which the Navi tells him. Does not reject it, doesn't hold back. He recognizes he did wrong. I'm sure he's not happy about the prognosis, but he says, because the Navi tells him, not only was it you, he says, you did it, you, now Hashem is going to punish you. Hashem is going to punish you in front of everybody. It's going to be, you did something privately, he's going to punish you publicly. So he's going to get it. And David says, I sinned. He doesn't give excuses, he doesn't, just accepts it. Earlier in Shmuel Aleph, we have the story of Shaul and Amalek. And Shaul does not successfully completely kill out Amalek. And as a result of that, he is punished as well. And the Navi Shmuel comes to Shaul and tells him that because of his behavior, his kingdom is not going to last, and Hashem is tearing his kingdom from him and giving it to somebody else. So back in Shmuel Aleph Perek Tes Vav, chapter 15, after Shmuel tells him everything that was done wrong, in Pasuk Chav, verse 20, Vayomer Shaul el Shmuel, Shaul says to Shmuel, Asher shamati b'kol Hashem, I did listen to Hashem. Voyleich baderech asher shlachani Hashem, I went on the way that Hashem told me. Voavi es Agag melech Amalek, I brought Agag ves Amalek, hecharamti adeshur Amalek, and he goes on with another Pasuk, explaining that he did not really sin. Shmuel continues and says, Hashem is not interested in your karbonos, without you didn't listen to him. And then finally, in Pasuk Chavdal, verse 24, Vayomer Shaul al Shmuel chatasi. Then Shaul says, you're right, I sinned. But he did not accept right away. Now, I don't think any of us would have the chutzpah to criticize Shaul, because I don't know about all of you, but I know me, that I don't take criticism very easily, and I'm not going to easily just say, oh, you're right, I sinned. You know, it's very hard to do that. It's very hard to accept a bad decree that is because of one's own behavior. Even if it's from a Navi. The Navi says, because you did such and such, therefore you're going to get smacked. A person's natural reaction is, no, I didn't do it, or hey, it wasn't me, or something like that, right? That's the natural reaction. It's very hard to say, I did it, Hashem is the judge, I accept it, everything. That's very hard to do. So, Eli does it, David does it, Shaul does not, or it's harder for Shaul to do it. Ritzba bas Aya is the Pilegesh of Shaul. And Ritzba bas Aya has her own two sons hanging for half a year, and they didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't their fault. And it was these scoundrels, the Givonim, who insisted on hanging them. But it is in response to a famine. It is through the Urim v'Tumim that David knew what had gone wrong, and Ritzba bas Aya says, Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo. Whatever Hashem says is correct. I accept it. And she stays there for 6 months or 7 months. We talked about it last week, just how gruesome it was with her own boys hanging there, and they're not buried, they're defiled, and she's just keeping the animals away, but it's a terrible thing. And she does not, for 6 months, she does not question God. She doesn't complain. She doesn't get angry. She doesn't get resentful. She accepts it completely. When she does this, David HaMelech says, now we exhume the body of Shaul and Yehonasan.
Because she'd undone the sin of her.
She undid that dance. She demonstrated she's his Pilegesh. As his Pilegesh, it means that she's someone who was heavily influenced by him. She was maybe not a full-fledged wife, but she had a relationship with Shaul. She bore children for Shaul. And here, she is correcting that I want to call it a minor issue. I say it's minor because Shaul does accept it in the end, but it took him a little time. It was a little difficult. And here, and it also, who am I to criticize Shaul? I mean, we're talking about someone who's in the same place in Gan Eden with Shmuel. We're talking about and someone who Hashem took the whole nation to task for not eulogizing him properly. So we, of course, are going to be very, very, very careful about criticizing. But we do know that there was a minor problem. Here, Ritzva Masaya demonstrates the antithesis of that. She corrects the wrong through his own sons, Shaul's own sons who were killed. David then exhumes the bodies because now the eulogy is completely l'kavod hames. There's only honor for, there's nothing bad you can say about Shaul anymore. Whatever things he did during his lifetime, it's all been corrected. The Givonim have killed seven of his descendants. That's done. Whatever minor thing about Ritzva bas Aya has accepted this terrible decree. Shaul is pure. Now when we exhume him, the eulogy is going to be complete, it's going to be full, and it will be all about the greatness of Shaul. There's nothing lacking anymore. And therefore, the exhuming of the body actually is a kavod for Shaul, because it's not just we're going to eulogize him the same way we would have eulogized him had we done it properly 20 years ago, whenever it was. But now the eulogy is going to be even better than it would have been back when he was actually killed. Because now, whatever minor things were there have been corrected. And all there is to say about Shaul is good. And all we can do is talk great about him. And therefore, David exhumes the bodies, triggering the hesped, the proper eulogy. It is done. They are reburied properly in their family plots, and now the famine ends.
All the sons exhumed and reburied?
So it only says... It only mentions Yonah's son, right? I imagine the other two were, it's three. It's three sons and Shaul. I imagine that the only reason they're not mentioned is because they weren't as significant. But we find it often where the Navi will mention, or the Torah even will mention the main ones, and the other ones are included. I assume that's the case over here. Yeah.
I'm sorry, remember last week you said, was it the Givonim that made them leave the bodies out?
Yes.
How could he, pick them up and bury them, and before he couldn't?
We said last time, really David could have forced the Givonim. I mean, he had control over them. He could have stopped them. But the reason why he let them kill them was because Hashem had said this was the punishment. Right. And the reason why they left the bodies hanging was so that people walking by would say, this is how Jews treat the gerim. These are not the strangers. They're those who don't, they weren't really gerim. They're sort of gerim, but it wasn't really. I mean, there was a decree made against them. They were not allowed to marry any Jews after all this, because they demonstrated that they have, I think I mentioned this last week, right? That David HaMelech said that there are three traits that Jews have. Jews are rachmanim, Jews are merciful, Jews are baishanim, Jews have modesty, and Jews are gomlei chasadim, Jews are kind. The givonim, who are so cruel, they cannot connect with the Jewish people. They don't deserve to be part of the Jewish people. And therefore, he made a decree that givonim may never marry into the Jewish people. They are referred to in the Mishnayos, they're called the nisinim, from the word nosein. Nosein means to give, because they were given over to be water carriers and water drawers and wood choppers. They were given over to that task. And they are called nisinim as a separate group that may not marry into the Jewish people. You may recall that term from when we learned Ezra and Nehemiah, because when Ezra separated all the Jews into their respective, Kohanim, Levim, Israel, one of the groups was Nisinim. Those were these Givonim. He separated them out because they cannot marry into the Jewish people. And this is the story through which they were punished and were no longer ever allowed to marry into the Jewish people.
Okay, but does the axiom of Ger Hayisa that you have to be kind to the strangers still apply to them?
Right, so not really, because they were acting in such a cruel manner, and they weren't really fully Gerim. However, David HaMelech felt that it was important, and the Gemara praises him for this, that it was important that all the nations of the world see that we don't mistreat the strangers in our midst. And since they did, Givonim did have a complaint, it was a valid complaint, therefore, he allowed this to take place, and he did not take down the bodies. And I mentioned to you last week that because of this, 150,000 new converts joined the Jewish people, because they saw how well the Jews treated the strangers. Those 150,000 I mentioned to you last week are going to be pivotal when Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash. Those 150,000 are going to be part of the workforce for building the Beis HaMikdash.
Maybe you discussed this already last time, and don't repeat it if you did, but I'll listen online. But did you talk about what induced these men of Yavesh Gilad to steal these bones? They took them back across the Yarden, right?
Yeah, they stole them from the Plishtim.
Were they Jews who did this?
Yes, yeah. I didn't talk about it last week. We talked about it when we learned about it then, and that's that the men of Yavesh, because Yavesh Gilad was a place that was saved by Shaul. They felt a special affinity to Shaul because he saved their whole city.
So they viewed it as rescuing his bones.
Yeah,
it's called stealing
them. Yeah, stealing it from the Plishtim.
Okay.
Had hung up the bodies of Shaul to show their victory. Look what we did to the Jewish king. And they snuck in the middle of the night, cut down the bodies, and made off with them. Right. That was an act of heroism.
Can I just ask, what did the Givonim think? What they asked for doesn't get them work back.
Right.
It doesn't really, I mean, they turned down the money. They didn't, you know.
Yeah.
So how did they think that this was helping them?
Revenge is sweet.
Sorry. Okay.
Right? I mean, is it not? Okay, I'm with you. I'm with you. If you can think rationally about it, I agree with you. They weren't necessarily thinking rationally.
What do we think happened to them? in the end.
The Givonim?
Yeah.
They remained as a separate group in Israel for a long time. You find them mentioned in the Mishnayos.
Yeah.
The Mishnayos is already the second Beis HaMikdash. You see them mentioned there. So they're around. But they're a group that are not allowed to marry into the Jewish people.
And we don't know who they are anymore.
I don't know. But this is part of the reason why you have to bear in mind that just because we find groups of people that may have some, some interesting customs that appear to be similar to Jewish customs, mm-hmm. that does not necessarily mean that descended from Jews. There were groups that were around that were connected to the Jews but were not Jewish. That's part of what Ezra did, is that he separated them out. But that was to build the second Beis HaMikdash. But with the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, we lost all the various. People make claims, they find a group that does this, that, the other thing. Oh, they're the 10 tribes. There are other reasons why there could be groups who were never Jewish who still have certain customs and rituals that are similar to Jews. Yeah.
Okay, so famine was because Shaul was not properly eulogized. And is it also because of the Givonim being mistreated?
Both. Both reasons.
Okay. And as Mrs. Lewis pointed out, Jews are not encouraged to think in these ways. We're not encouraged to be cruel or to think that revenge is going to... We're really discouraged from thinking that revenge is going to solve a problem.
Right, right.
That's why we have IRA Miklat. So why would this be considered a grievous sin? It seems to be more of a political problem.
Why would what be a grievous sin?
That the Givonim have a grievance that hasn't been dealt with.
What was done to them was bad. They did lose their livelihood. And as a result of losing their livelihood, they either went through very great hardship, and some of the commentaries say some of them died. That, they did... Some of the commentaries even say that there were a few stray Givonim in Nov when the Kohanim were killed, and they were killed along with the Kohanim. So it's not like...
Sure, but they're not supposed to be there in the first place.
Well, they were the water carriers, and they were the ones working for the Kohanim. That's how they lost their livelihood. So they have a legitimate complaint. What David was trying to tell them is, okay, you have a legitimate complaint, but you don't have to kill people. There's other ways of receiving some compensation. And, we can deal with it that way. And they were unwilling. They were unwilling. I mean, they would have been enriched, but they were unwilling to do it.
I wonder if they had asked to be converted, if they could have been.
If they what?
If they really wanted to get where it would hurt, they would have said... We want to be the same status of Jews and be able to marry Jews.
Right. They could have
enriched themselves spiritually, but they weren't thinking in a spiritual way at
they
all.
They wanted revenge. They wanted revenge. That's what they were after.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, when we talk about revenge and we're encouraged not to take revenge, remember that we do ask Hashem to take revenge for us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we say that in Avinu Malkeinu. Nekom le'inenu nikmas dam avadach ha'shafuch. Take revenge. Preferably in front of us, take revenge against the blood of for the blood of your servants that has been spilled. So it's not that revenge is inherently bad, but we are told in the Torah that we are not to take revenge against our fellow Jew.
Isn't God referred to as a revengeful God?
Yes, he's called an Akel Nekamos Hashem. The Gemara says that for Hashem take revenge is a good thing. It's that we are told not to do it to our fellow Jews.
In the second Beis HaMikdash, they're not going to have any of these Givonim as water carriers or...
Yeah, but they're there. They're still there.
They're still hanging around, but they don't have that job anymore.
I assume not. I don't know for sure.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. I don't actually. The truth is, the Pasuk might say it in Ezra. I don't remember to look that up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would David have left the bodies longer? I mean, is what Rizpah did... encouraged him to bury these bodies also?
Yeah, I don't know what would have happened. You're asking what would have happened if Rizpah would not have done this? What would happen? Forget Shaul and his sons. What would happen to these seven bodies? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, eventually it'd have to come down, I assume. I don't know. The parak continues in Pasuk Tezvav, verse 15. Now, this is a whole new, it's almost like a new chapter. It's a whole new discussion, nothing to do directly with what we just learned. There was another war between the Plishtim and the Jewish people. David and his servants went down with him. And they fought with the Plishtim. And David became exhausted. David, you recall, is not just the great king and the great Talmud Chacham and the great Tzaddik. David is also, he really begins his career as the great warrior. And David was all of the powerful warriors we have talked about, Yoav and Avner and Amasa ben Yeser, all of these great and powerful warriors that we've talked about, we have to remember the greatest of them all is David. David is maybe in Jewish history, he is the greatest single soldier, power, warrior, whatever it is that we have ever had. He's the best. Now, maybe Moshe Rabbeinu was greater. Shimshon
was... Goliath was just... He wasn't an army. He wasn't... command an army.
Yeah,
he commanded himself.
Right, but before that, David had... They would say, Shaul killed in the thousands, David in the 10,000s. Yeah. David was... Right. He was able to... He was just a very, very powerful, very, very experienced fighter. He was a force to be evident on his own. We're going to learn shortly, and that we won't get to it tonight, but we're going to learn that David, I'm going to tell, it's just, this is too good. I really should save this for when we get to it, but it's so good. It's such a delicious thing. David would keep, you know, that a bow and arrow. You remember that we talked about this once?
Very, very long.
No, not just long. A bow and arrow, so the strength of a bow and arrow, how far will the arrow go?
How far you put it back.
It's not how far you pull it back. It's how far you bend the wood. Mm-hmm. The wood is what gives it the twang. The string doesn't. The string is not. It's not elastic. They didn't have elastic. The string is not the thing that what really gives it its twang is the bow itself. The mm-hmm. wood. You bend the wood. It would be very strong wood. You bend it, and you hold it, which takes a lot of strength to hold it. And then you let go, and the wood snaps back into place, and that catapults this arrow. And the further you can bend it, or the more rigid that wood is that you have bent, the further the arrow will go. So the stronger a man was, the further he could shoot an arrow. And its archery was not like gunpowder. Gunpowder is the great equalizer. You can be a weakling and shoot a gun as far as anybody else can shoot a gun, because the gunpowder has nothing to do with the person shooting it. I guess holding the gun has to do with it. The aim, right. But not the gun itself. The power of a bow and arrow is in the strength of the arms of the person shooting it, because you have to bend it and hold it. Now, the really strong bows were bent by foot. You would take the bow, you'd bend it with your foot, because otherwise you couldn't bend it. It was too hard to bend. You needed some leverage. After it was bent, you held it with your arms. The strength of your arms fit that arrow in, and you shot it. I mean, it was a real skill. David HaMelech kept in his room where he would receive visiting kings bows, like over the mantle. Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Made of nechoshes, made of copper, which was unheard of. Right? It's not wood. He would use copper. And he would hear the kings, he would wait for them to look at the bows and say, you think you can possibly bend that thing? No way. He's just doing that to scare us. And then he would nonchalantly walk into the room, take the bow off the thing, and bend it in front of their faces, mm-hmm. just to show them that, right? He was a very, very strong, powerful person. He was David. You know, he's not this little scrawny kid. I mean, this is a very, very powerful man. And here in this battle, which is towards the end of David's reign, an unbelievable thing happens, which is that David becomes exhausted in battle. That never happened. David was the one who never became exhausted. David was the one who's always the powerful one. He's the one who seems to have never-ending energy. And he became exhausted in battle. What? Now, that connects to the next pasuk. V'yishbi v'nov. There was a man named Yishbi v'nov. Asher bilidei harafa. who was of the children of Harapha. Harapha has another name. It's a woman. What's that?
I'm sorry.
It's a woman. Mm-hmm. It's a woman. And Yishbi Vinov is one of her children, but she has three other children, which we're going to read about now. And her real name, the name we know her by, has three of these letters, but one is changed. The first letter is changed.
Arpa.
Arpa is the mother of Gallius. This is a brother. Vishbi Vinov, a half brother. Vishbi Vinov was one of the sons of Harapha. Umishkal Kano Shlosh Meos Mishkal Nechoshes. The weight of his. Now, Kano, I don't even know the English translation for this, on a sword. So if you're holding a sword, you've probably seen this, they have a hand guard on the sword. It comes down as like a helmet over the hand, over the handle, so that it protects the hand of the person holding the sword. That's what this means. This hand guard, I guess, the weight of the hand guard was 300 weights of copper, which is hard for us to know exactly what that is, but it was a significant weight, and that's just the guard. Forget the sword. Because Yishbi Vinov was a giant of a man, just like Goliath, his brother. Vuhu Chagur Chadasha, and he was wearing a he was Chagur means he was girded, he was belted. Chadasha, brand new. So Rashi explains that he had passed the military academy. He had just graduated from military academy, and this was his first show of strength in battle. Meaning, he had just graduated from, I guess, you know.
This is his black belt.
Right. So he'd been in battle before. He was a skilled warrior, but he had never been in the position, I guess, of the leadership position in the battle. And here he was given that leadership position in battle, and he wanted to make a name for himself, Vayomer Lahakoses David, and he wanted to strike David. What better name can you make for yourself than killing the greatest warrior on the planet? So he's also avenging the death of his brother.
Half brother,
right. And David was exhausted in battle, and Yishbi Vinov might have been successful. Vayazar lo Avishai ben Tsruya. So Avishai ben Tsruya helped David. He came to David's rescue. Vayachas haplishti, and he struck the plishti, meaning Yishbi Vinov, vayimiseu, and he killed him. So Avishai ben Tsruya comes and saves David from Yishbi Vinov. Again, this was a first time this had ever happened. David never needed anybody else's help. But now he needed help. And Avishai ben Tsruya, you'll recall that Tsruya, David's sister, has three sons. Yoav ben Tsruya, of course, is the most famous. And then you have also Amasa, Asael. Asael, he was killed earlier by Avner. And now we have Avishai. We've had him before. Avishai always is, we've had him before. He's the one, Mrs. Lewis, he's the one you liked. Right, remember?
Right.
He's the one who when David was being cursed, and he said, let me go remove the head of this
dead dog,
right? That's Avishai, right? So Avishai ben Tsruya, who, to my knowledge, there is never a negative thing said about him in Tanakh. So he comes and saves David. Now, Rashi tells us, Chazal say, he saved him by davening for him. Now, he also killed Yishbi Vinov. But Avishai, who was also a great tzaddik and a great Talmud Chacham, in addition to being a great warrior, davens for David. Now, there's a story that goes along with this, which I don't think we're going to get to the whole story tonight. So I think we're going to save the story that goes along with Avishai for next week. But right now, let's just understand that he killed Yishbi Vinov. And then, because of this, as nishbu anshe David lo lemar, so now the men of David, his inner circle, his close great warriors, they made him swear, they swore him, saying, lo seitze odi tanu la milchama, do not go out anymore with us to war. V'lo sichabe esner Yisrael. Don't let the candle, the light of Yisrael, be extinguished. You are the light of Yisrael. We cannot afford for you, chas v'shalom, to be killed in battle. And therefore, we want you to stay home. Until now, David went into every battle. He went in front. He was the leader of the armed forces in the real sense. Remember, we talked about this once. The difference between what it means to be the head of the armed forces in the United States, where you sit comfortably in the control room back wherever. You don't even go to the other country. You stay in the United States. Right over there, David is the first one in battle. But finally, towards the end of his reign, towards the end of his life, they don't want to lose him, and they ask him to please stay away from the battle. Instead, what do they want him to do? They want him to daven for them. Because David's prayers are very precious to Hashem, and therefore they want that as being the way that he helps them in battle. Vayhi acharichin, it was after this, vayiti od ha-milchama begov im plishtim. There was another war in Gov with the plishtim. Azhika sibchai hachushasi es saf asher bilidei harafa. Sibchai hachushasi, another one of David's men, he strikes and kills Saf, who was also of the sons of Harapha. So here we have a third half-brother. You've got Goliath, Gishbi Benov, and now we have Saf, who's another one. And Simchai HaChushasi, this is the first time we've heard about him, he is the one who kills Saf. Yud Tes 19, Vati od ha-milchama begov im plishtim. There was another war in Gov with plishtim. Vayach Elchanan ben Ya'arei Orgim. And Elchanan, the son of Ya'arei Orgim. Orgim means the weavers. So he was the son of Ya'arei, who was from the family of weavers. Now, why is their family occupation being mentioned? Obviously, that's going to be significant. Beis Halachmi, they came from Beis Lachem. Who did he strike? Es Goliath Hagiti. He killed Goliath Hagiti. The Eitz Chaniso, and the wood of his sword, meaning the handle of his sword, Kimnor Orgim, was the size of the weaver's pole, because the weavers have to have, on the loom, you have this big pole, which you roll the cloth, right, onto. It's a massive piece of wood. That was the handle of his sword. Now, this is confusing, this pasuk, because it mentions Goliath.
Yeah.
And Goliath was by David. So there's two ways of understanding this pasuk. One way of understanding is that this is a fourth brother, half-brother, who had, when it says Goliath Hagiti, it actually means a brother or half-brother of Goliath. That's actually what it means, even though it doesn't say that. And Elchanan ben Yare is a new person, just like Sibchai HaChushasi in the last pasuk was a new person. Elchanan ben Yare is also a new person. However, the mainstream explanation is that Goliath Hagiti is Goliath, and Elchanan ben Yare is another name for David ben Yishai. The pasuk you'll notice back in Yud Ches in 18 says, "Vayehi acharei chen." It was afterwards there was a battle. In Yud Ches in 19, it doesn't say afterwards. It just says there was another battle. So this really means there had been another battle back in Shmuel Aleph. Now, why is it mentioned over here? Because here we're mentioning the deaths, the killing of all the sons of Arpah. We want to do it all together. So therefore, the Navi is recalling for us that battle. But here we receive a little bit more information. We receive a new name for David, Elchanan, which very few people know that's another name of David. So we have to discuss that name. And his father, Yishai, here is called Yarei, and from the family of weavers. What does it mean to be from the family of weavers? Says the Medrash, because Yishai's family used to weave, they were skilled weavers, they would weave the parochas, the curtain that divides between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodashim. They weaved the parochas for the Beis HaMikdash. Well, there was no Beis HaMikdash yet, but for where the Aron was, they would weave the parochas. That curtain, which was a very it was a very beautiful, complex curtain that took special skill to weave. And his family, Yishai's family, was the family of weavers. A new thing we didn't know about David and his family is introduced to us here. So obviously our question is going to be, why is David's name here referred to as Elchanan? Why is it important for us to know that they were from the family of weavers? What is the significance of weaving that the parochas? What does it have to do with the whole story over here? So this is.
Also, he was in the field when they came to make him king. So right. It couldn't be just parochas.
Shepherd. Yeah, at the time he was a shepherd. That's right. Okay, so these are points we're going to have to cover again. I think we're going to end up with laying the groundwork for next week. Pasuk Chav, verse 20.
Can I ask a quick question before we go on? It says that there was war again at Gov, but the again would seem to refer to Nov, right? Wasn't the last battle in Nov?
You know, also Gov.
No, in Pasuk 16.
Oh,
I'm just wondering.
In 16. No. His name is Yishbi Vinov. That's his name.
Oh, he was in Nov.
No, his name is Yishbi Vinov. He's always called Yishbi Vinov.
Oh, because the English translation doesn't make it like that.
Oh, really? In the Gemara, he's always called Yishbi Vinov.
Okay,
but. It's good.
That clears up a point. Okay. I thought that maybe there was a typo here. I mean, I don't mean a typo, but you know what? That somehow Nov got changed to Gov.
Yeah. You know, you mean like the same.
But you're saying the battle wasn't in Nov. That's just where Ishbi was from.
Yeah. Wait, when David killed Goliath, it was in the valley.
Where was it?
Yeah, it was. You can go visit that valley, right?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so Gaz makes sense. Right?
But then it's not again in the same place as what you're saying. Right, Diane?
Yeah, that.
Because where David and Goliath went wasn't this place.
In other words, there's pieces that match and pieces that don't match. Bethlehem matches.
We're gonna
Golias matches. Gov doesn't match.
Gov. We're gonna let's finish the story of it. Gov is apparently a place in Gas, as we'll see. I think so. Oh, let me just see one thing. Hold on, one second. Yeah, Gov is a place in Gas. It's apparently it's either a neighborhood within Gas, or Gas is a neighborhood within Gov. I'm not sure, but they're referring to the same place. Pasuk Chav, verse 20. Vati od melchama begas. There was another battle in Gas. Vayish madon. There was a man of great measure, and it's a man you have to measure. Which means he was either very short or very tall. So for our purposes, obviously he was very tall. Ve'etzbos yadav, ve'etzbos raglav, sheish v'sheish. He had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot. Esrim v'arba mispar, for a total of 24. The Gemara discusses why it has to spell out like that, because you might have thought he only had 6 on one hand and 6 on one foot. No, he was 6, 6, 6, and 6 for 24. Fagam hu yulad laharafa. He was also born to Harafa. The Gemara discusses whether this is considered to be a handicap, or is it considered to be an advantage? And he had 6 fingers. Is that somehow an advantage? He was able to do more with his hands than a regular person, or is this some sort of a blemish that he had 6 fingers? The Gemara discusses it in the context of an animal with extra digits. Is it puzzle? Is it no good for a carbon? Because
what animal that we would sacrifice?
No. Let's say it doesn't normally have more digits, and here it does. Let's say it has an extra digit.
But the animals that we sacrifice. I mean, cats do have 6 and 6 and 6 and 6.
No, the animals
that we sacrifice don't have.
They have hooves
and toes.
Yeah, they have hooves. They have hooves.
They have feet and hooves.
Birds.
Birds.
Birds have.
They only have 3.
Yeah. Hooves. So what if it would have a 4th?
That's
what I have an extra digit.
It might be an advantage, but it might look weird.
Right.
So it could be both.
Right. The Gemara also says, what if a coin has an extra digit? Uh-huh. Is he no good for the avoda? Because is that called a blemish?
What do they conclude?
I would think if it was
machlokas.
I was thinking if it was good to have six fingers and six toes, Hashem would have created human beings that way.
Look, I mean, sort of. I think we'd agree that if we had an extra arm, we could get a lot more done, right?
Not necessarily. Such people.
No, only because I'm saying Hashem would make people coordinated with more. We're used to where we are, and anytime a person has extra whatever it is, they're not coordinated, they're not able to handle it, and their brain doesn't whatever it is. But if Hashem would have created man in a way that naturally we would have six or eight or whatever it is, we would get more done.
Right, but also if the toe was like the thumb that could actually move around and hold things, then it would be helpful. Mm-hmm. But if it was just on top of another toe and doing nothing, it would be, I don't think we have enough information.
Right. Takes longer to cut his nails. Okay. Chaf Aleph.
What would the order be?
21. Vayecharefes Yisrael. He degraded, he denigrated the Jewish people. Vayakehu Yohanan son ben Shima. So Yohanan ben Shima killed him. Achi David. Shima was one of the brothers of David, and Yohanan is the nephew of David. He kills. Who's this person? I lost his name. He kills. It doesn't say his name. That's right. It doesn't say. So he killed him. As Arbas Ela Yuladu LeHarafa Begas. These four were born to Harafa in Gas. Vayiplu v'yad David uv'yad Avadav. They fell in the hands of David and the hands of his servants. The Gemara says that Arpa, because she took four steps with her mother-in-law, with Naomi, right? Thank you. Because of that, she merited to have four very powerful sons. And these are the four. And the Gemara says that let the son of the... what's the lashon over there? Devuka. The sons of the one who cleaved to Naomi come and kill the sons of the Neshuka, the one who kissed Naomi and went home. Rus was Davkaba, she stuck to Naomi. Arpa kissed her and left. So let the sons of the one who cleaved, the son of the one who cleaved, come and kill the sons of the one.
They were all
when we say giant, I don't know what that means exactly, but it means they were all
huge, powerful.
Right. They were unusually large and powerful people. They were unusually large and powerful. They're certainly bigger than David, that's for sure. It seems to be even bigger than Shaul. Shaul was bigger than David.
Is Orpah dead at this point?
So the story that I'm going to share with you next week is going to introduce Arpa's death as well. We'll see what happens to Arpa. Her demise happens with the story with Avishai and David. It's one of these hard to understand stories, funny kind of story. But we'll go through it next week. Yeah.
So this last pasuk really reinforces that. Elchanan is another name for David. Mm-hmm. This is really the good evidence.
Yeah, it seems that way. Not everybody learns that way, and they have to kind of fudge their way through this pasuk, but the simple meaning seems to be that there were four. Goliath was one of the four. Not that there were four more besides Goliath, but there were four, including Goliath.
Was it Orpah, the older sister of Ruth? Because it seems like these are Orpah's sons, but yet it is Ruth's grandson.
Yeah, no, it could be.
It's
her great-grandson.
I'm trying to figure out the age.
The older son, Mahlon, was the one who married Ruth. And Kilion married Arpah. So I don't, it would seem therefore Ruth, I don't know.
These children would have to be much older than giants.
Yeah. Unless it means descendants. Unless it means who knows? It's hard to know exactly. The reason to learn the other way is because Goliath is called the way that there were five.
Yeah.
It's because Goliath is called Ish HaBeinayim, the middle man. The Gemara says he was the middle of the sons. That sounds like there were five, and he was the third.
Oh, I see.
But most Mepharshim say it doesn't mean he was the exact middle. It just means that he wasn't the oldest, he wasn't the youngest.
Is it left as a machlokas?
It's not a machlokas. It's just obscure. It's not very clear. The Gemara never really makes it 100% clear.
But the upshot is that we take Elchanan to be another name for David.
Yeah, that's what it seems. Yeah.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.